हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay so in the table of contents, so chapter 15, the killing of Dhanakasura, the ass demon. 16, Krishna chastises the Kaliya, serpent Kaliya. 17, the history of Kaliya. 18, Lord Balaram slays the demon Pralamba. 19, swallowing the forest fire. And 20, the rainy season and autumn in Vrindavan. And 21, the gopis glorify the song of Krishna's flute. Preface. Sukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Ram and Lord Krishna attained the age of Pauganda, 6 to 10, while living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending the cows. Engaging thus in the company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of their lotus feet. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.15.1. After playing until the end of their fifth year, Krishna and Balaram were permitted to herd the grown cows. The first day of herding these cows is described in the Kartik Mahatmya of the Padma Purana. On the eighth titi of the waxing moon of Kartik month, called Gopastami by the learned, Krishna began to herd the cows. Previously, he was herding only calves. They decorated the land of Braja with their footprints, which had the marks of flag and other auspicious symbols. This made Vrindavan extremely beautiful, punyam. Previously, since Krishna's feet were very small and soft, the impressions of the flag and other symbols were very faint. However, now the 21 marks were very clear. This is indicated by the word ativa, extremely. These marks made Vrindavan more beautiful than ever. Sardartha Darshani 10.15.1. So chapter 15, the killing of Dhanaka, the ass demon. Pratigya, despite his appearing just like a village boy, there are occasions when he proved himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes men pose themselves as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and cheat innocent people, but they can only cheat. They cannot exhibit the potency of God. Adhyaya Prakasha. This chapter describes how Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, while tending their cows in the pastures of Vrindavan, killed the Dhanakasura, enabled the residents of Vrindavan to eat the fruits of the tall trees, and saved the young cowherds from Kaliya's poison. Revealing their boyhood, Pauganda, phase of pastimes, Rama and Krishna were one day bringing the cows to pasture when they entered an attractive forest decorated with a clear lake. There they began playing forest sports along with their friends. Pretending to tire, Lord Baladev laid his head upon the lap of a cowherd boy and rested as Lord Krishna helped relieve his elder brother's fatigue by massaging his feet. When Krishna had placed his head on the lap of a cowherd boy to rest, and another cowherd boy massaged his feet, in this way, Krishna, Balaram, and their cowherd friends enjoyed various pastimes. During this play, Sridham, Subal, Stoka Krishna, and other cowherd boys described to Ram and Krishna a wicked and irrepressible demon named Danuka, who had assumed the form of a jackass and was living in the Taliban forest near Govardhan Hill. This forest was full of many varieties of sweet fruits. But fearing this demon, no one dared to try to relish the taste of those fruits. And thus, someone had to kill the demon and all his associates. Lord Rama and Lord Krishna, hearing of the situation, set off for this forest to fulfill the desire of their companions. So, this aspect of being able to appreciate that Krishna kills the demons, his superpower, but at the same time, it doesn't affect their rasa, the sakya rasa. Right? This is an aspect of that intimacy of the sakya rasa. Right? They're unaffected by this. So, it means you have those who are junior, those who are senior, those who are equal. Then they just, because they see themselves as equal, then they, you know, they don't, it doesn't disturb their relationship with Krishna that he can kill these demons and do all these superhuman activities. It's not a disturbance. So therefore, then they will say this all very nicely, you know, because you're saying all these things to create that chivalrous environment, right? That's the taste that's brought out. So with these cowherd boys, then that aspect of chivalry, even though it's a secondary rasa, it's actually part of their primary rasa, of their friendship with Krishna. Right? Generally, the secondary rasas are always just secondary. They come up to support the primary. But with some devotees, some aspects of the secondary rasas are actually part of their rasa. Right? Does that make sense? The main is of course, the sthi is the friendship, but the secondary rasa is so much part of it that, you know, it's always there, that it's not counted as a secondary rasa, it's counted as part of the primary. Right? So then, these boys like Sridham, you know, especially Stoker, they have that equal aspect. Subalu have that intimate aspect. He's a confidential friend. Arriving at the Talavan, Lord Brahma shook many fruits out of the palm trees. And as soon as he did so, the jackass demon, Denuka, ran swiftly to attack him. But Balaram grabbed his hind legs with one hand, whirled him around, and threw him into the top of a tree, thus slaying him. Right, so he didn't even have to use two hands. Just one hand, he grabbed both of his feet. All of Danukasura's friends, overcome by fury, then rushed to attack. But Rama and Krishna took hold of them one by one, swung them around and killed them, until the disturbance was finally finished. When Krishna and Balaram returned to the cowherd community, Jashoda and Rohini placed them on their respective laps. They kissed their faces, fed them with finely prepared food, and put them to bed. Some days later, Lord Krishna went with his friends, but without his older brother, to the banks of the Kalindi in order to tend the cows. The cows and cowherd boys became very thirsty and drank some water from the Kalindi, but it had been contaminated with poison, and they all fell unconscious on the riverbank. Krishna then brought them back to life by the merciful rain of his glance, and all of them, regaining their consciousness, appreciated his great mercy. Shlokanusharanam, summary of verses 1 to 19. The daily Vrindavan pastimes of the Gopas, 20 to 28. Krishna and Balaram are persuaded to go to Talavan, 29 to 40. Danukasura and his friends are defeated, 41 to 46. Krishna is heartily welcomed home, 47 to 52. The Jamuna becomes poisoned. Verses 1 to 19, the daily Vrindavan pastimes of the Gopas. Sukadev Goswami said, When Lord Rama and Lord Krishna attained the age of Pauganda, 6 to 10, while living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending the cows. Engaging thus in the company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of their lotus feet. So, this interesting is that in this more kind of rural community that in the modern context would be considered more backwards, then since their occupation is herding cows, right? Then the herding of cows would be an adult activity, right? But we see as Krishna and Balaram at the age of 6 then could start to take this up, right? So, and at the same time, is in the modern context when it's all about the kid and encouraging and don't make them feel, you know, like they're unable and empowering and on with all kinds of wonderful and fabulous statements of how you say it? Empty, flowery words. Anybody, any kid at 6 in any aspect of modern culture will be given responsibility. Nothing, especially occupational.
Usually say child exploitation.
Then it'll be child exploitation if they're doing, right? But the point is that they're able to do these things. That's the whole point, is that by the time they get to marriageable age, then how expert they are. They already have an occupation that they're expert at. Does that make sense? That's the whole difference in the Vedic culture, is when you get married, you're already expert. You already have an occupation. So now you're trained, you have an occupation, you get married, you carry on your life, everything goes very nice. You have your children, they're all trained nicely. You know, you're not too old that they annoy you. You know, you still have that youthfulness that where you can appreciate. So that's the whole concept. It's a very, very different approach. It's all about the relationship, it's all about the individual. Well, the modern, we'll talk about, it's about the individual, but it's about just generic, faceless demographics. That's the fun part. This is the glory of Mahamaya, that by the influence of the most of ignorance, she can make something that's not nice seem very nice, and something that's actually nice seem not nice. That's the fun.
Yeah, I was just thinking just previously that Krishna, he's done such a wonderful activity, and then we see when he goes home, he doesn't carry, like in the modern or in the conditioned state, we carry that idea we've done something great, and we enforce that in all of our relationships. We want everyone to know that we've done something great.
Yes.
It spoils the relationship.
Yes.
Krishna is so intelligent, he just adjusts according to the relationship.
Very nice. Yeah, because he's just a child. Because even we see when Balaram comes home, and they're all kings of Dwarka, when he comes to visit, Mother Jeshoda just picks him up, puts him on her lap. Right? So how she's dealing with him now at 6, she deals with him like that, even though he's, I'm not sure what age, but it's seriously older. Like that. Yes, like that. Because it's about the specific relationship. So in the Vedic one, it's about self-realization. It means what is the self, the soul, what is the nature of the body, therefore, and the mind, what is the relationships that you're involved in. So the effect of self-realization is that the engagement in relationships goes very nicely, while the modern concept of the position of self-centered then actually reduces the quality of all relationships.
Like we find the way that Krishna is acting as a Vaishya, and therefore at the age of 6 he's starting to herd the cows. So he's been trained in his occupation at the age of 6. So then for the other Varnas, like, you know,
the other Varnas, are they trained in the same way? It means in the Gurukul system, then the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and they would all take care of the cows of the ashram. So that part they know. Mm-hmm. Then organizing the ashram, because see the Brahmin and his wife, they would be taking care of the house. They know how to, they're doing that. But because as you add more boys, there's more to manage. So therefore the boys then take part in managing the boys and the activities of the boys. Right? And then the Brahminical activities, they learn the Vedic mantras, they learn the yajnas, they learn the pujas, they learn all the, you know, sacred rites and all that that are there as a part of their own personal sadhana. Mm-hmm. Right? So that means then, let's say, if they when they graduate, then Brahmins already know their occupation because mm-hmm. the ashram activities are their varna activities, mm-hmm. right? The Kshatriyas, then their varna depends upon having that character and the Vedic training in the Brahminical activities to actually be able to perform the Kshatriya duties. And they have been helping with the organization anyway, right? And the Vaishyas, they've taken care of the cows and all that, but the most important thing of business is actually having the proper character. Because making money, that's just going to happen. You know, just like hungry kids eat cookies. So Vaishyas, when they see an opportunity to make money, they make money. It's not that you have to train them in that. Does that make sense? But if they have the character, then they'll make money without exploiting others. And they will properly give in charity, they'll pay their taxes, they'll properly spend their money, they won't be misers. You know, so everyone will get benefit by the money they generate. Mm-hmm. They'll actually pay their shudras properly, take care of them. Mm-hmm. They'll take care of family members in a nice way. They'll pay their taxes, they'll give charity to the Brahmins. Mm-hmm. And they'll do welfare work. Mm-hmm. So that means everyone in society gets benefit if the Vaishya has character. Mm-hmm. Business he'll know anyway. You don't actually have to train in business. When you have a business school, you have to train someone in business. You're actually training shudras. Because shudras, they know the art of something, but to know the whole thing, to be able to be on an as sophisticated level externally to function with a Vaishya who naturally just can see, you know, how you say, for a Vaishya, 2 and 2 makes 10. Right, you know. But for you, it's 3. When the IRS comes, it was 1. You know? You understand? So they do that naturally. You don't have to train them in that. If you train them, they'll just learn it quicker. If you don't train them, they'll figure it out. You train them, they'll learn quicker. So instead of taking 5 years to figure it out, then they'll figure it out in 2. That's the only difference. But without the character, then they won't take care of who works under them, their juniors. They won't take care of family members. They'll be miserly, and only when they like they do or not. They won't want to pay their taxes. They won't want to give to Brahmins. They won't want to do welfare work. So that's why then you see is that the character training in the Vedic educational system is actually the main things that makes them dwijas. Right? And the Shudras, then, they'll grow up in the environment of their particular art. Mm-hmm. Right? Their father's a carpenter, then they'll learn carpentry from this age. From 4 or 5, they're in the shop sweeping and doing different things like that. So by the time, so the idea is by the time they're 16, they'll be a master carpenter. Mm-hmm. The Vaishya at 16, now he has the character. And that, and he's taking care of the cows and all that, so he understands. So now just go by going and spending a few years in some relative shop or like that, then he'll be able to do that. Or if it's cows, he already knows how to do it. So if it's the natural things, he already knows that. But if it's going to be trade or banking, that he goes and works under family members that does that, relatives. And then, you know, by the time he's 18, 20, he's expert. Right? And so, but he's already well situated. So then he's all right. The Kshatriya, he knows then all the Shastric aspects. He knows the character. He has the proper attitude in which to perform. He knows he has his sadhana, so he can properly perform those activities. Now, by in the palace, then he will also, you know, in turn, under all the prime minister, the other ministers, the generals, all this kind of aspect in which then he then learns how to do everything. But he already has the basis of that. These other things are just the specific detail. They're not the major thing. The major thing is the character and the basis of what is management. Right? Does that make sense? Because the basis is always the good character and based on Shastra. Then for the Brahmin, then when he's 16, he's been doing all these activities for his whole training, so there's no further training as such, unless he wants to specialize in a particular area. He wants to go into the Shrautas and all that. Then he may, or other branches of the Veda, then he may, as a Snataka, go and study for some time, and then get married. Does that make sense? So the Vedic system, it's already worked out nicely. So everybody is starting the elements of their occupational training like this, you know, at 5 or 6. Everybody is. It's just a matter of which aspects are... So for the Shudras, it's just the skill. Right? But the point is as a kid, you make mistakes, you don't care. Right? It doesn't... If you make a mistake as a kid, it doesn't affect your ego. So therefore, you keep doing it till you become expert. So in the quickest way possible, you'll become expert. Well, as an adult, you do something wrong, it affects your ego, you don't want to make the attempt. Or you're very cautious. So it actually takes longer to learn a skill as an adult, even though the modern thinks, no, that's where it's all happening. It's actually kids learn it so much faster. Just like, you know, a perfect example is language. The parents are in one country, they move to another country. Totally different language. In 3 months, the kid speaks the language fluently. Maybe not the grammar's perfect in his vocabulary, but he can go out and talk to anybody and he's fine. And in 3 months, the adults can't speak at all. It'll be years. Maybe they'll be able to get by. You know? So unless they have a nature to learn languages, they won't know it. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. Because why? The kid will say stupid stuff. You know, the grammar's wrong and all this and that. You know what they mean, but it's a kid. Who cares? But if it's an adult you speak like that, it's kind of like, well, you know, what's going on? So then you just don't open your mouth. You just speak in your language. And then they'll go, okay, you don't know the local language. So then they'll adjust. You know, so it's, you know, you're not a local, so in that way, the identity, but it doesn't affect your false ego. You know, unless, of course, you're in France, because if you don't speak French, then what's the whole point? Even though they can perfectly speak the language that you're speaking, they will not speak it out of principle. Of course. Yeah. You know, because it's just, you're in France, you speak French. It's like if you're in America, you speak English. You don't go to America and speak French. Who speaks French in America? So it's the same principle. So that makes sense. So that's the whole point, is that when you start these things as a child, you learn them so much quicker. So that's the whole principle. If you don't get into practical stuff when you're early, then one will say, oh, it's exploitation. But actually, it's not. Maybe people use it like that, but that's the adult's problem, not the kid's problem. If the kid is learning something at a young age, doesn't mean he's being exploited. Others may be exploiting, but you stop the exploitation. But them learning at that age, then to stop them learning at that age, and then they learn at an older age, that's actually the problem. Because then everything gets put back. And so then, by the time that they actually get up there, they have children, they're already in their mid-age. And the point is, as a youth, then what children do doesn't actually affect you very much. You know, you think it's childish, but it doesn't bother you. But once you hit 30, then what children do annoy you. And so then how great a parents will they be? So now we're saying, oh, it's bad for them to do this. Now it's even more bad for their children. So in other words, in the name of all these nice things, you have these very, how do you say, elderly intellectuals who, without any real knowledge of reality, come up with all kinds of, how do you say, theories of how to... They see things aren't going right, but they come up with their own theories according to their own conditioning, and then expect that these will be impressed upon others. You know? So it's... How is that any different than, you know, Pizarro and all those guys? You know? It's just that those guys went out with a musket, and they go out with, you know, a textbook. It's the same position. Does that make sense?
Desiring to enjoy the pastimes.
Okay. Thus desiring to enjoy pastimes, Lord Madhava, sounding his flute, surrounded by cowherd boys, who were chanting his glories, and accompanied by Lord Baladev, kept the cows before him and entered the Vrindavan forest, which was full of flowers and rich with nourishment for the animals. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, by using the word Madhava, which also means the spring month called Madhava, there is an indication that Krishna, like spring, caused the forest to rejoice with blossoms. Okay, so when Krishna goes into Vrindavan at night, then all the trees and all that become very, you know, sober and like this. And then when he comes out in the morning, then everything blossoms and everything becomes very nice. Right? So in separation, then they have one feeling, and then when he comes, then they manifest another mood.
Is that the reason why it has been said that all the seasons are present at the same time?
Is that why all the presents are at the same time? It's not that all the they're at the same time. In the all-season forest, they're all present at the same time. Mm-hmm. The wonderfulness of all the seasons. Mm-hmm. You understand? So any season that it's in, then it'll have. Otherwise, we'll see it's coming up to autumn, rainy season, mm-hmm. autumn, so the seasons are there. There's an all-season forest that you can go into. And all the seasons are going on in that forest at once. But generally, you don't see that so much in these pastimes. That's more with the gopis. You know, the cowherd boys, they can handle a season for 2 months. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get boring for them. But for the girls, then, you know, we did that yesterday. So there has to be another season. You understand? Slightly different, how you say, time cycle. Right, yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest, which resounded with the charming sounds of bees, animals, and birds, and which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of 100-petaled lotuses. Seeing all this, Lord Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. Footnote 1. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 2 to 3. To Bhagavad Arkamrichimala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhuri Ma, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Okay, so the 19 is the variety, and then 20 is the sweetness. So here we see the sweetness of that affection that the devotees, they're trying to please Krishna. And so in that variety, then we see the sweetness that's being manifest. The other, we're showing the variety, and this is, we're showing the sweetness. Yeah, so these nice lotuses and that. These are just standard things the breeze is carrying. That's why there's a breeze, because if there's no breeze, how do you get the smell from the lotuses? Because they're in the water, you know, onto the land where Krishna is. The sandalwood trees, you know, they're in one area that is being brought. Other flower trees, and that's being brought. So that's what breezes are for, right? Breezes, they bring the refreshing smells, they create that very nice, pleasant feeling like this. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, seeing that forest which gave joy to the five senses, he desired to play. How did the forest give joy to the five senses? The bees humming sweetly, the deer and the birds singing melodiously, gave joy to the ear. Vrindavan was served by gentle cool breezes, scented with lotus which took shelter of lakes filled to the brim with cool, sweet-tasting water like the minds of great devotees. Because right? the great devotees, their mind, there's nothing material there, so what's there? Only Krishna. So it all works nicely. Right? In the material world, because there's so many material desires, then being, one is that you have all the material desires, and much of the time they conflict with each other, right? We want tons of money, so we're making it in business, but we want to spend tons of money. Do those two go together? No. If you invest money, you make tons of money. You spend money, you make less money, right? There's less to invest. You understand? You want to eat, how much you want to eat of all nice tasty things, but at the same time you want to be active after eating. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that everything, it's all contradictory. So then, like throwing a handful of rocks into a pond. You're going to get all these different waves coming and they're going to not match together. Does that make sense? So, that's one aspect. The other aspect is that because of that, then everybody's competing with everyone else because each one wants to be the center of attention. Right? So, that's always going to create conflict. So therefore, there's conflict outside, there's conflict inside. So, the mind cannot be clear. The mind cannot be focused. Right? Does that make sense? So even if you are able to take advantage of some self-help guru and put all your ducks in a row like that, so you have all of your material desires, but you prioritize and know how this one fits that and this, so that you can make it flow very nicely. Okay, inside you may have put it together, but outside it's going to be a problem because now, because before you're a little bit of a problem for others because you don't have your life together and they don't have theirs together. But now that you have yours together, you take advantage of them and now it becomes even more of a problem. So even though you may have brought up one on the inside, you created more trouble on the outside. Does that make sense? And anyway, despite all this, the soul won't be satisfied. Even if you do get everything orderly the way you want, you can't be satisfied. So that'll create more dissatisfaction, because the more you think you have it together and it doesn't work, the more it annoys you. If you don't think you have it together, it doesn't bother you. Right? Does that make sense? So the materialist can never actually be in a clear, peaceful state of mind. It's not possible. Even the yogis, even the jnanis, still it has these problems of being self-centered and contradictory desires. Right? And, of course, the nature of the soul won't be satisfied. But for the great sages, the great devotees, then there's only one point. It's about pleasing Krishna. All other desires are in connection with pleasing Krishna. So therefore the desires don't conflict. And when you're working with others, everyone's about pleasing Krishna. So if it's actually pleasing Krishna, you fit in where you fit into the whole thing. So in other words, desires will fit in according to where they match fitting Krishna. You know, according to the situation presented by the Lord's internal potency, then you're going to perform that activity then. Does that make sense? That's what you're going to do. And when you're with others, then you're going to fit into how that whole scene then with everybody manifests. So there's no problem. And Krishna being the soul of all souls, you'll be satisfied, so there'll never be any problem. This makes sense. Yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that there's no problem in dealing with this. So therefore their mind is completely clear. Right? You can see things now, and what do you see? Krishna. So that's the point. We're saying it's that clear. You know, we're not saying that the minds of the great devotees are as clear as a lake. No, the lake is as clear as the mind's devotees. So that means their mind is the most clear. And then when a lake, you know, is quite clear, you can see nicely, then you'll compare it to that. So, the coolness gave joy to the sense of touch. The sweetness gave joy to the tongue. The fragrance gave joy to the nose. And the beauty of lotuses gave joy to the eyes. Right? So all these things, in all their ways, all gave their joy. Sukadeva Goswami continued. But yes, so that one breeze then does everything, right? That whole scenario, the breeze is giving the cooling touch, it's carrying the sweetness of the smell, right? And then seeing the scene, then for the eyes, right? So all these things are very nice. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The primeval Lord saw that the stately trees with their beautiful reddish buds and their heavy burden of fruits and flowers were bending down to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. Thus he smiled gently and addressed his elder brother. Ah, so this is where that is. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Seeing all the trees bending down with reddish shoots, fruits and flowers to touch his feet, Krishna smiled. Seeing himself glorified by the trees, it was improper for him to speak of his own glorification when he praised the trees. Therefore he smiled in great bliss, and unable to remain silent, he began to speak, giving his glorification to Balaram. Thus he addressed Balaram as Adi Purusha. Okay. Adi Purusha in verse 6. He appeared to smile, or almost smile, in order to hide his intentions from Balaram. Brihad Bhagavatamrita says, when the sweetness of Vrindavanan, Ananda of Vrindavan, okay, the sweetness of Vrindavan and its inhabitants become strong in the mind of Krishna, and he began praising them, through which he himself receives praise. He did so by using Balaram as the object of praise. However, the verses do not actually depict Balaram's glories. Out of Sakya Bhav, Krishna speaks his own glories in a joking way in the name of Balaram. Though Krishna is the younger brother of Balaram, in this verse Krishna's address is Adi Purusha. Yeah, Purusha to denote his position as Swayam Bhagavan. Okay. It was just up here, he's Purushain. So it would possibly be more French or something, and then Purushato, then he's Japanese. Right? So he's the lord of everyone. Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O greatest of lords, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. O original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. So so as we are seeing is here is the pastimes in Golok, they will always be in reference to the human concepts within the material world, right? In principle. It means in detail they're not material. But here is that the concept of karma and this and that. These trees are trees because of their devotion. But, you know, he's saying it like to eradicate the dark ignorance that's caused their birth as trees. But these trees are all extended by the Lord's internal potency to make, you know, the Dham and everything like this. They're all part of that. But they'll be seen in that capacity because then it brings out more flavor, more variety, more sweetness. Right? Because if everything is just all seen from its the position of tattva, how much taste will be gained? Right? That's why those who function solely in tattva, that's Shanta Rasa. It's not a dynamic rasa. Right? So only a dasya, when there's a sense of possession, then we see that it becomes dynamic. Otherwise, before that, it's not. Right? Because then that aspect of tattva starts to, you know, go down a bit for that aspect of service. Because otherwise, if you look at tattva, how can we actually do any service? What does God need? Nothing. So then what could we do? So it's just appreciating his greatness. Does that make sense? So we, of course, have to appreciate his greatness, but it doesn't mean that it's not tempered by the idea that we could actually render service. Yeah? Does that make sense? So that's why they go on in this way, and it brings out the sweetness. And we see as cowherd boys, then boys always play with each other. There's that aspect of chivalry and laughter and these secondary rasas. So, and then in doing that, then you can say something about someone else, you know, and seeming to glorify them, even though maybe you're not, or you're glorifying them. Seems to be you're glorifying them, you're glorifying yourself. It's just part of the play amongst equals. Right? So then, yes. So this is going on very nicely. So, yeah. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. Right? Because even though he's just coming as a cowherd boy, they still, as trees, are worshipping him by bowing down and offering their flutes and flowers, buds, everything. O worshipable one, these peacocks are dancing before you out of joy. Those doe are pleasing you with affectionate glances, just as the gopis do. And the cuckoos are honoring you with their Vedic prayers. All these residents of the forest are most fortunate, and their behavior towards you certainly befits great souls receiving another great soul at home. Because it's only those who are more developed than that actually appreciate a great personality, so therefore then they can deal properly. So to be able to worship on this nice level, you know, completely, then means that they are great personalities themselves. Right, so here he's just referring to them like that, because then that's the poetics. You can do that. You take the trees, and in poetics you talk about them. These other things, because rhetoric is about how nicely you say something. Right, it doesn't have to make sense. Right, so in the Vedic sense, rhetoric is used for the purpose of poetry. Right, it's alankara. That's what it's used for. In the modern sense, they'll use it in politics and everything else. You know, so I mean, of course it has its use in etiquette, it's applied in etiquette, but it's for enhancing relationships. Right? Does that make sense? It's not to be used to overstep relationships. So in the West, logic and rhetoric go together. But in the Vedic, it's rhetoric and poetry go together. It does. Does that make sense? It can be used in the logical, but that's not its main purpose. Yeah, and the cuckoos, then they're chanting in the Vedic prayers, because everything they chant is in glorification of Krishna. And the Veda is all about glorifying Krishna. Therefore, their chants are Vedic. We may or may not be able to appreciate it, but the acharyas have pointed this out. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Krishna said, in order to respect you for coming to their house, the cuckoos by sweet sounds, sukaihi, the peacocks by dancing, and the deer by glancing, attempt to please you, priyam kurvanti. It is natural that a cultured person will welcome a guest with dance, kind glances, and sweet words. Ishan shatam nisargaha. Right, so we say to their house, they're saying, what house? The forest is the house of all these animals. This is where they live. This is their house. So when Krishna comes out of his house and comes to their house, then they're very happy. And then they glorify and serve in this way. And so this is the natural thing. Dance, kind glances, sweet words, you'll create a nice atmosphere. That's how it's done. That makes sense. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, Krishna saw all the trees overloaded with fruits and fresh twigs, bending down to touch the ground as if welcoming him by touching his lotus feet. He was very much pleased by the behavior of the trees, fruits and flowers, and he began to smile, realizing their desires. Krishna then spoke to his elder brother Balaram as follows, my dear brother, you are superior to us all, and your lotus feet are worshipped by the demigods. Just see how these trees, full with fruits and flowers, have bent down to worship your lotus feet. It appears that they are trying to get out of the darkness that has obliged them to accept the form of the trees. I think the drones that are buzzing all around you must have been your devotees in their past lives. They cannot leave your company because no one can be a better, more affectionate master than you. You are the supreme and original personality of Godhead. And the drones are just trying to spread your glories by chanting at every moment. I think some of them must be great sages, devotees of your lordship, and they are disguising themselves in the form of drones because they are unable to give up your company even for a moment. So we see is that the things are seen, the Vedic standard is given in connection with the human interaction. So therefore the trees then in performing service, then it's what they as trees can do that's in line with the principle of human culture. Right? So bowing down, touching his feet, offering things. Yes. What are drones? Drones are the you could say the specifically the male bees. Right? So all the male bees, because they're a little bit bigger. Like that. So then the bumblebees and that, you know. So whether it goes broader than that, but in specific, it means the male bees. But I think it could also just mean, because bees, when they fly, they drone. They make that steady sound like that. So maybe if they're just buzzing around, that itself is called droning. So those who drone are drones. Yeah, because they just kind of buzz and go like this. So these drones are nice because they can buzz around. They're devotees. They don't break down relationships. Yeah. Sri Krishna continued, this earth has now become most fortunate because you have touched her grass and bushes with your feet, and her trees and creepers with your fingernails. Because you have graced her rivers, mountains, birds, and animals with your merciful glances. But above all, you have embraced the young cowherd women between your two arms, a favor hankered after by the goddess of fortune herself. The BBT purport states, Krishna and Balaram would glance lovingly and mercifully at all the rivers, hills, and creatures in Vrindavan, right? Because they're taking all these forms just to please Krishna. So that they are doing a very pleasing job, then they're being pleased and giving that glance of mercy. We see some nice arrangement that is there. We think it's for us, so then we're very happy. But we're not giving any blessings or mercy or kindness to that scenario that we're looking at. We're just trying to enjoy it while Krishna is enjoying it and giving his blessings. Because it's his energy that's doing it. So.
But usually when we come across, you know, a sacred river, usually in India, so many rivers, we offer them blessings. So that is also like...
We offer obeisances, yes. Yes. But are we giving blessings? No. Okay.
Expect blessings, yeah, from them.
So there is that aspect of that service. But here is showing just that aspect. Krishna is showing his kindness. Mm-hmm. They're showing their service. He's reciprocating. Mm-hmm. But the blessings received by the gopis, being embraced directly between the Lord's arms, was the supreme benediction, desired even by the goddess of fortune herself. The goddess of fortune who lives in Vaikuntha on the chest of Lord Narayana once desired to be embraced on the chest of Sri Krishna. And thus she performed severe austerities to achieve this blessing. Sri Krishna informed her that her actual place was in Vaikuntha and that it was not possible for her to dwell upon his chest in Vrindavan. Therefore she begged Krishna to allow her to remain on his chest in the form of a golden line. And he granted her this benediction. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur recounts this incident from the Puranas. Because what makes the difference? Why can't she? What's the problem? Yeah, she's married to Narayan. She won't give up the concept of being married. Right? That's how she wants to deal. While we see the gopis, they're embraced. Because they don't have that concept. He's the paramour. Right? So their marriage to their so-called husbands, as it's called, that's just a social formality so that they can move around freely. Right? Because the girls that are unmarried, they don't move around so freely. Right? There's always some kind of supervision. But the married women, then if they're moving together in a group, no one's going to care. of the unmarried girls, unless it's something specific, like in the evening they all go down to the temple at the end of the village. That's understood, right? But if they're at the other end of the village, then they might, you know, people will think it's strange. Does that make sense? So as married women, now they can move around more freely. They'll be given responsibility. And so therefore then they can, let's say, take care of Krishna in the evening and bathe him. Because that's the married women do that. All you see is the ones that are not generally aren't. They may assist. Does that make sense? So the point is, in the Vedic culture, when one's married, then one's considered immediately a mature member of society. And if you're not, you're generally considered, you know, children. That's just the way it is. So it's not about age. It's not age bound. Within marriage, then there's age. So if you're married, then you're more mature, but who are older within that marriage, they're considered more mature again. You know? And then you can now and again put in time like that. Someone who's married when they're 30, and then they, you know, and now they're, how you say, 50. Someone else is married when they were, you know, how you say, 18, and now they're 50. Or let's say they're 48 or 45. The other one, the older ones are considered their senior as grihasthas, but technically the younger ones are, because they've been married longer, they have more experience. But their age is respected, because of that's fair. But the other's time and experience is respected. Does that make sense? Like that. So you have this aspect that it makes it so then being married is going to be an advantage, but at the same time is because it's she's in the mood of Swaki and she won't give that up in her relationship with Krishna. How can she take part in the Vrindavan pastimes as Parakya? Because Krishna's not married in Vrindavan. So you can't take part in Swakiya pastimes in Vrindavan. So since she won't give up the Swakiya, she has to stay in Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? And so then in Vaikuntha, then she is Krishna's husband. Does that make sense? Yeah. But it's been worked out that the Srivatsa, then that indicates Lakshmi. So in this way, then she's on his chest. Right? But it's a formal aspect. But still, nonetheless. Sukadeva Goswami said, thus expressing his satisfaction with the beautiful forest of Vrindavan and its inhabitants, Lord Krishna enjoyed tending the cows and other animals with his friends on the banks of the river Jamuna below Govardhan Hill. Right, so other animals means he also had buffaloes. And whether there were any goats mixed in, that I don't know. I've only heard of the cows and buffaloes. But goats also. But whether he had goats, I'm not sure. The Abhiras, then as Vaishyas, they tend goats. So your top level of Vaishyas, they deal with cows, the next level deals with buffaloes, the next level with goats. But it's not that the top level doesn't have some buffaloes and goats, it's just they have cows. Or the next level down, they'll just have buffaloes. They might have buffaloes and goats. Maybe they have a few cows, but it's mainly buffaloes. And then goats, guys, they'll mainly have goats.
And they also have sheep.
Sheep, oh, okay. Sheep can all be part of the scene. Yeah, mm-hmm. They'll make your wool, yeah. Mm-hmm. So all of that, they're all there. But for Krishna, because the main is the cows, then that's the principle. Right? So they're known as cowherds. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reveals the following alternative meaning to this verse. Krishna told the other boys, after resting here at Govardhan for a short time, you should proceed to the bank of the Jamuna and play for some time. I will come soon. Though inseparable from Balaram during this Pauganda age, with the appearance of Kishore age, Krishna began his amorous pastimes with the gopis alone. This is indicated in the verse by the word Avam. Having praised Balaram and having made him herd the cows through the forest of Vrindavan, Avam, he to whom Radha, Srimat, shows love, Prita, came to Manasaganga Adre Sharid Rodasu, and began to enjoy with the Saki Sanugaha. Srimat refers to the chief woman of Braja, Radha, Srimati. So in this way then, the hidden meanings are given. So it's the same, so the same pastime goes on, but we see in his Pauganda age, then he won't necessarily be going off. But with as he gets older, then he will do that. He'll, Balaram will take the cows and then go with the cowherd boys, because he's mainly the lord of the friendship rasa. And so then Krishna will go off with the gopis, and in this case to Manasi Ganga. And this verse is referring to that. So someplace they'll be meeting, so that's one of the meetings. Because Kusum Sarovar, that's one of the places, all these around that area, Govardhan. So the boys will be on one part, they'll be on another part. Because this meaning is confidential, there is another meaning, which covers this jewel like a golden case. Srimat can refer to Baladev, Krishna, who had affection. Okay, now we're getting like Zulu here, right? Krishna, who had affection for Balaram, began to sport with his friends on the bank of the Manasa Ganga. Right, so that aspect is there. It can have all these meanings. That's the whole wonderfulness of the poetics. It can have many meanings. So you'll see this is commonly used, that one word that can mean many things, then it will be used in the context of how it's used, but at the same time the environment in which it's used then indicates the other uses also. That way you don't have to repeat it every time.
So both of them are true.
Both of them are true, yes. But the one is being covered by the other, because one's confidential. Sukadeva Goswami continued, sometimes the honeybees in Vrindavan became so mad with ecstasy that they closed their eyes and began to sing. So that's what Prabhupada mentions about, like, if you know the language, then so much more can be appreciated, the sweetness and the fineness that's there. Like Prabhupada mentioned about the, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said devotees would learn Bengali to be able to appreciate the sweetness that's there. You know, because for us in English, it's not that sweet. You have to really go out of the way to make poetry to make English more sweet. So the, and in standard speaking, elements of poetry being used generally is looked down upon, like alliteration. You know, you do alliteration in something, you're writing an essay, you know, in your secondary education, the teacher will always hand it back with a mark saying that this is a fault. Always. You know, what's wrong with poetry? But they don't like it. You know, using passive voice, you know, to kind of bring out the subtleties. No, they don't like it. So it's just anything that's nice, they don't like. You know, like that. So here is that, but in the Vedic languages, the Sanskrit and the Prakrits, then poetry is a natural part of how they deal. And so you can make it more poetic, of course. But even just the regular speaking is so sweet. So then if one appreciates, then one can see how nice all these things are, how they're using the words, how they're using them. Sanskrit, of course, to be more formal doesn't mean it can't express all these things. But the Prakrit languages, they'll tend to be a little bit more sweet, a little more simple.
When you speak Sanskrit also, like, you know, when two people know Sanskrit and when they converse with each other, that is also very poetic, even though it is not poetic.
Yes, means they're not trying to be poetic. Yeah. So in other words, what we're meaning here is this common speech is poetic, and then there's poetry, mm-hmm. right? Which is even more. So that's the thing, is that it's already really nice and sweet, and then it gets even sweeter. So then you'll see is that when they use that for, you know, the acharyas and write poetry, you know, like the prayers or the dramas, these things that are based on kavya or these alankara, then you'll see even more sweetness comes out. So, yeah.
Like in Brahma Samhita, Brahma is telling every word is a song.
Yeah, every word is a song, every step is a dance. That's why it said it's just how they'll move, because they're moving properly, so every movement is mudra. So it's according to the dance things, because the dance, in the Vedic dance, the dance movements are to express a particular emotion or activity. Therefore, if one knows the science of that dance, then one can, just by seeing the dance, understand everything that's being described. We just see it as a nice dance because that's all it is. It's nice ways to put it together that the feelings of the music and the movements, they match. You know, a note is held, they'll hold a pose, something's going quick, they'll move quickly, that kind of thing. So it matches like that. But in the Vedic, those aspects will be there and more, that each movement actually means something. It has specific words to express it, a particular emotion. Right? So it goes more, it's further. So if you have that emotion, that's the natural movement to express it. That's why it says then when greeting a guest, welcoming a guest, they'll be dancing this. That doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you get out the banjo and start a hoedown, right? You know, you can do that, but, you know. So, does that make sense? Right, so the point is that one will use these nice movements. It's not dry. It's, you know, formal will be in the occupation. Here it'll have that sweetness, that nice movement, and the nice way of speaking, and all these different things like that. And then for us, of course, as devotees, then they're singing and dancing because we're doing kirtan and bhajan. So in that way, it also has that meaning. Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Sometimes the honeybees in Vrindavan became so mad with ecstasy that they closed their eyes and began to sing. Lord Krishna, moving along the forest path with his cowherd friends, and you don't have to worry though, will they bump into things, because they can't stay in one place. That's the, so they can just sit and sing and like that. So the buzzing is there, and the singing is there. Right? Lord Krishna, moving along the forest path with his cowherd boyfriends and Baladev, would then respond to the bees by imitating their singing while his friends sang about his pastimes. Sometimes Lord Krishna would imitate the chattering of a parrot, sometimes with a sweet voice, the call of a cuckoo, and sometimes the cooing of swans. Sometimes he vigorously imitated the dancing of a peacock, making his cowherd boyfriends laugh. Sometimes with a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds, he would call out with great affection the names of the animals who had wandered far from the herd, thus enchanting the cows and the cowherd boys. Right, because the deep sounds, they go very far. Like sometimes in the morning, I don't know if you get the effect, but some I'll get it here, is that around 4:15, sometimes 4:30, even 5 o'clock, you hear something that sounds like a conch shell. So I think, oh, it's the conch shell in Prabhupada's Samadhi, because sometimes depending which way the wind's blowing, you can actually hear the conch shell over here. But if it's blowing a different direction, you can't. And then, you know, I'll think it's that, you know. Then it'll keep on going, you know. So not just three, it goes on, and it keeps going, and keeps going. And then you figure out it's a train in Navadvip, or it's a train on the main highway. So because of that lowness, that goes the farthest. So those deep sounds, that's what then goes very far. And then that will be appreciated by the cows, because also it has that you know, that bit of rumble to it, that bit, you know, something that it has an attractive aspect. You know, the deep speaking is always an attractive aspect. And so I think it's newscasters, they always have to speak in a deep voice. The voice they speak in is not necessarily a normal voice. They speak in a lower voice because it sounds better. Is that what it says? It's just, that's the way it is. People like it. The BBT purport states, Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Lord Krishna would joke with his friends, saying, "Just look, this peacock does not know how to dance properly." Whereupon the Lord would vigorously imitate the peacock's dancing, causing great laughter among his friends. Right, so you know, vigorously means, you know, they would exaggerate. And so like that, then he causes his friends to laugh. So the peacocks are dancing to please Krishna, and Krishna's dancing to please the cowherd boys. Like that. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Sometimes he would cry out in imitation of birds, such as the chakoras, crounches, chakravas, bharadvajas, and peacocks. And sometimes he would run away with the small animals in mock fear of lions and tigers. When his elder brother, fatigued from playing, would lie down with his head upon the lap of a cowherd boy, Lord Krishna would help him relax by personally massaging his feet and offering other services. Sometimes, as the cowherd boys danced, sang, moved about, and playfully fought with each other, Krishna and Balaram, standing nearby, hand in hand, would glorify their friends' activities and laugh. So they would stand together and sometimes watch as the cowherd boys, they would wrestle and fight, and then they would, you know, how you say, cheer them on, how to encourage them. They would, okay, glorify their friends' activities and laugh. Sometimes Lord Krishna grew tired from fighting and lay down at the base of a tree, resting upon a bed made of soft twigs and buds, and using the lap of a cowherd boyfriend as a pillow. The BBT purport states, the word Pallava Talpe Shu implies that Lord Krishna expanded himself into many forms and laid down upon the many beds of twigs, leaves, and flowers hastily constructed by his enthusiastic cowherd friends. So just because they all want to do service and all that, then he expands so that they all can do service. Just as with the gopis, then he expands to dance with each one of them. So in the same way the cowherd boys, but each cowherd boy will think Krishna's just with us. You know, just like when he's taking a meal, they're all sitting around him. And that, but they each think that they're sitting just in front of Krishna, and Krishna's looking and just interacting with me. So each cowherd boy would feel that. So this is his mystic potency, that he's using his potencies, but how he's using them, the effects as is in the standard human method. Right? It's not that everybody closed their eyes and then in meditation, not none of this kind of stuff. It's just he just looks and interacts with each boy, but he's able to do that with each and every boy. So that's the specialness.
So, this is the prakasha form, so I'm Bhagavan interacting with each and every
time. It's the same, but did you, can you define whether prakash means different personality or not?
No, because I'm thinking in terms of expansion, there's amsha and...
There's expansions, but they have the forms of, there's prakash and vilas.
Yes, so your the form will be same.
The same, but with the same personality. Is that prakash?
No.
So which is it?
Vilas.
So why say prakash? You understand? That's why I'm saying you go by the actual definition. He expands himself. So when the expansion has a different flavor, like Balaram is Prakash, when it's the same, that's Vilas. Does that make sense? Like Krishna and Dwarka, that'll be Prakash. But when Krishna and Dwarka expands with each of the queens, that's Vilas. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. At the top of the page.
Okay.
Sukadeva Goswami continued, some of the cowherd boys, who were all great souls, would then massage his lotus feet, and others, qualified by being free of all sin, would expertly fan the Supreme Lord. So when it said before, Krishna would massage Balaram's feet or other services, and like this, they would fan, they would, you know, yes, sit, they would do different, whatever is the different kind of activities that are the standard ways of dealing. My dear king, other boys would sing enchanting songs appropriate to the occasion, and their hearts would melt out of love for the Lord. In this way, the Supreme Lord, whose soft lotus feet are personally attended by the Goddess of Fortune, concealed his transcendental opulences by his internal potency and acted like the son of a cowherd. Yet, even while enjoying like a village boy in the company of other village residents. He often exhibited feats only God could perform. But amongst them, it's not going to disturb them. That's why when he does these things, it's not in front of the adults. Like with Putana, they went outside to kill him. They just know they went outside and then they came and found him with Putana. Trinavarta, there's the storm kicking the cart. No one saw. Just the boys can see and it doesn't bother their rasa. So we see the boys see all of these except Putana. But it doesn't, so he can do these aspects of God. It doesn't affect the friendship, because then if you're equals, the bigger your friend is, the bigger you are. So what's the problem? You know, he can be as big as he likes. It works. Right? But parental Ross, it's you're bigger, he's smaller. So if he becomes bigger and bigger than you, how's the parental Ross going to work? You understand? Yeah. Who do we offer the lamp to first when you're offering to Mother Jashoda and Krishna? See, as in the offering of lamps, there is who you're going through and then who is being worshipped. Does that make sense? Yes, but still, this pastime, how are we able to appreciate this pastime? Yes, so then you offer to her first. But it's not the artik. See, is this is somehow not a very well understood aspect of artik. See, is any ritual, anything you do, they're just saying any secondary action, the formalization of any action, has three parts. There's the preliminary, there's the action itself, and then there's the conclusion. And without these three, it's not complete. Right, let's say you want to cook, you have to arrange the kitchen, right? Then you actually do the cooking, then you have to clean up the kitchen. Anything you do has these three. Does that make sense? You brush your teeth, you have to get out the toothbrush, the toothpaste, you have to make sure your teeth are there, right? Like that. Then you put the toothpaste on the toothbrush, right? Not on the handle, not on your fingers. You know, all these different things. Then you brush your teeth. When you're finished, you rinse your mouth, you wash your toothbrush, and the toothpaste is put back, all these different things. And does that make sense? So, that means in an artik, the actual artik itself is, in this case, worshipping Krishna. That is the central portion of the artik. Right? Now, just as we'll call all of that, preparation, cooking, and cleaning as cooking. So in the same way, we call all the whole thing of when you pick up a lamp and start waving it around as arti. But when you pick up the lamp, going through Guru, Garanga, you know, like this, Mother Jashoda, that's all preparation. And you'll go in orders. Who's the most, you know, goes through up to there. So then after that, you worship Krishna. Now that's the arti. Now having worshipped Krishna, now it goes back down. Then Jashoda and everybody else, and it'll come down, and all the Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? So that's why this whole thing is your offering, and then you have to take off and do this and do that. No, that's not important. On the way up, you don't do any of those stuff. Oh, how could you offer it to them? It has to go straight to Krishna. So some of you pick up the lamp straight to Krishna, because you offer it to Guru, then he's such a greedy fellow, then he'll get all the blessings from. He'll smell all the smell out of the flowers and, you know, all that kind of stuff like that. He'll pick out, you know, all the nice sweets and fries and leave just the rice for Krishna. You know, so, you know, he's a nasty fellow. So you just have to offer it directly to Krishna. Right? Yeah. So, the whole point is it's absurd, but somehow or other people in mental speculation get into these head trips and they actually think it's real. The point is the offering doesn't actually happen until you've gone through everybody up to, then when it gets to Krishna, now it's being offered. Then after, it's offered down through everybody like this. Does that make sense? So that's what you're doing. So you'll offer it to Jashoda, you'll offer it to Krishna, then you tend to offer it to both. Then after that, you can go down. Or if you don't have time, then you offer it to both, because then that's the pastime of them interacting. So that's the rasa, the dominar leader is that rasa, so you can offer it to them both. You don't have to do one or the other. So. depending upon how crowded the temple is and how much people are bumping you, then you decide on how long or short the padati is that you're going to use for offering your lamp.
And the wick size.
Yeah, and the wick size also, yes, you have your wick size. That's why then if you hold actually the lamp between your forefinger and with your forefinger on top and then your thumb and middle finger underneath, then you can push the wick up as it starts to go down. Because otherwise, if you hold it the any other way, then you have to stop, put it in your other hand, fiddle with it, kind of the other one, then you can just keep going. And so when there's that just that little bit left, that's when you put it down. So. Yes?
Some years ago in Baltimore, you said on the same topic, and you ended the conversation with...
I was in Baltimore?
Yeah.
Really? Boston, okay. Yeah, Baltimore.
No, the deity worship man said that. Same thing came up. He said that the deity worship process, the Panchayatic process, is supposed to demystify the material world, not to increase its mysteries.
Yes, yes. Yeah, because otherwise you have something and then they make it even more difficult.
Once you use the phrase that, yeah, if you were to enter that whole sub-hemisphere of what the deity worship speculations are, that's the phrase you use.
Yeah, no, it's a whole.
One whole.
Yes. So that's why we see, we take the acharyas, the mood they have, it's very straightforward. It may be sophisticated, but it's straightforward. Well, we're used to the concept that sophisticated means complicated. The Vedic, you don't need complication. The whole idea of the Vedic is it's non-complicated. But whether it's very simple or sophisticated, that's the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? But does that make sense? Because in the West, simple means generally unsophisticated. And sophisticated means complicated. That makes sense? But in the Vedic, they're not synonyms. So you can have a gentleman in the village, very simple fellow, but the culture is very refined. Just like, let's say, a city gentleman. The difference will be in the paraphernalia he has, his mannerisms and things like that may not be as refined, how he dresses, how he speaks. But the point is the quality of culture is the same. That's unique in the Vedic culture. And if you know the culture, you'll be able to appreciate that even outside your traveling anywhere. I remember Sumaka Maharaj was telling me that some of the best preaching was in the villages, because he was from Italy, was not in the city, but in the villages. Because people would come around, they would give so much stuff. If you're just walking down the road, you're a devotee, you're walking down the road, and they're sitting on, their veranda, they're eating their meal, because it's always a family, they see you walking, they'll call you over. There's no question that they won't. You can't walk down their street and not be called over. The only reason no one else calls you over is because you're already at somebody else's house, right? Does that make sense? So, but you can see the culture that's there. But from the modern standpoint, it won't be seen as culture because culture is considered complicated. Someone's not actually able to see what's actual culture. So that's the thing. Vedic, you're actually able to appreciate what's real culture, real relationships. Right? Because it's about what is being used in realistically, that human beings use, that's what's considered real. Because that's what Krishna uses. Not things that can, there may be all kinds of far out things, but that's not how it's considered. It's considered in how it relates to the human. That's how you define. This seems to have gone over time. Okay, so ends here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Natai Gaura Premanandini.